Imagine for just a second that you are sitting at your desk.
Right, probably way past normal working
Oh,
hour.
exactly. The office is completely quiet, mostly because it's just incredibly late. And you're staring at an absolute mountain of information scattered across, your monitors.
Sounds like a familiar nightmare for a lot of people.
Totally. I mean, you have raw financial data pulled from like three different systems. You've got these incredibly dense policy documents just filled with legalese.
And probably a massive stack of historical board reports, too.
Right, spanning the last three quarters. And the clock on your wall is just ticking loudly. You have an executive meeting in exactly 1 hour.
The pressure there is just, it's suffocating.
It really is. The pressure in your chest is building because you know the executive team walking into that room, they don't just want you to read the numbers back to them.
No, I mean, they can read a spreadsheet themselves.
Exactly. What they demand from you is the story behind those numbers. They want to know the why, the how, and mostly the what do we do next to protect the business.
Which is incredibly hard when you're just drowning in raw data.
Right, the sheer volume of data is paralyzing. So how do you find the actual signal in all of that noise without, completely losing your mind?
I mean, that right there is the defining anxiety of modern corporate leadership. You are absolutely starving for synthesized, actionable insight.
Yeah, and the expectation to deliver that insight instantaneously with like zero margin for error has really reached a fever pitch.
Because the traditional tools we've used to process that information, they simply can't keep up with the volume anymore.
Which brings us directly to our mission for today's deep dive. We are exploring a highly practical, incredibly timely framework aimed at chief financial officers.
So we should probably clarify that right off the bat.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to be clear, this is really for anyone who has to manage and synthesize high-stakes information to make strategic decisions.
Right, we're looking at a comprehensive guide on how to use AI tools, specifically Claude, safely and commercially in a corporate environment.
And confidently, too. The material we are synthesizing today is exceptionally robust.
It really is. The anchor text is this comprehensive guide called Claude for CFOs by Peter Morgan.
Right, from Byron Thomas Recruitment. But what elevates this from just like a generic thought piece is the underlying research.
Yeah, it's not just theory. This guide is heavily backed by empirical 2026 data.
Exactly. We're talking guidance from the absolute heavyweights of enterprise consulting and tech, IBM, Deloitte, McKinsey, PwC, and Oracle.
So we are looking at a real consensus view of where the future of knowledge work is actually heading right now.
Yeah. So whether you are prepping for a massive boardroom presentation or trying to untangle a financial integration that feels completely overwhelming, this is for you.
Or honestly, even if you're just intensely curious about how AI is reshaping executive leadership.
Right. This deep dive is designed to be your ultimate shortcut to being well-informed. And the best part, no background in computer science needed. Zero coding required.
That is the crucial part.
Okay, let's unpack this. Where do you think we should start?
I think the best place to start is with the central thesis of the Byron Thomas piece, because it challenges this very pervasive, very existential fear we all have.
You mean the whole robots are taking our jobs thing?
Exactly. For the last couple of years, the headlines have been dominated by this narrative that the algorithm is going to replace the CFO entirely.
Right, which is terrifying.
But the source material argues that this is fundamentally the wrong risk to worry about. The immediate risk to your career is not that a machine replaces you.
Okay, so what is the actual risk?
The risk is that another CFO or another finance director learns to use AI better, faster, and more securely than you do.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And they simply outmaneuver you in the market.
That completely reframes the entire anxiety. I mean, it's not humanity versus a sentient machine.
No, not at all.
It's a professional utilizing a new lever versus a professional refusing to use that lever. It's like if I'm digging a trench with a shovel and you show up with an excavator, I'm going to lose my job to you, right? Not to the excavator itself.
That is a very apt way to look at it. And the text goes further to emphasize that to operate this new machinery, you don't need a master's degree in machine learning.
Right. Nobody has time for that anyway.
Exactly. What Peter Morgan calls for is practical AI fluency.
Fluency. I like that word.
It's a very specific type of literacy. It means possessing enough operational understanding of the tool to actually lead a finance department.
And to challenge third-party software vendors who are, constantly trying to sell you AI solutions.
Yes, to protect your internal control environment and to ultimately just stay commercially relevant.
Let's linger on that word fluency for a second, because it intentionally frames artificial intelligence as a language rather than like a piece of mechanical hardware.
Which connects directly to a really fascinating insight in the source material from Jensen Huang, the CEO of NVIDIA.
Right. He makes a huge point about this.
He does. He observes that human language has effectively become the new programming interface. He literally calls it the great equalizer.
And to appreciate how monumental that shift is, we kind of have to look at the history of computing.
Oh, for sure. The barrier used to be incredibly high.
Yeah. I mean, historically, if you wanted a computer to run a complex financial variance analysis, you had to learn its language.
You had to physically punch cards in the early days.
Right. And then later you had to write complex code or build these intricate SQL database queries.
Or at the very least, become an absolute wizard at nesting 50 lines of Excel formulas just to get a single answer.
Exactly. The machine dictated the terms of communication. But Wang is pointing out that for the first time in human history, that barrier has completely collapsed.
If you can articulate a problem in clear, logical English or Spanish or Japanese, the machine bends to your native tongue.
It's wild. You can command the technology simply by being an effective communicator.
The implication there is just massive. It means the most valuable technical skill in a modern enterprise isn't knowing how to code in Python anymore.
No, it's knowing how to think critically and articulate a problem with extreme precision.
And Dario Amodei, the CEO of Anthropic, he echoes this exact sentiment in the material.
What does he say about it?
He warns that AI models are rapidly improving across literally all forms of intellectual work. His message is basically a sense of urgency.
Like, you need to learn this now.
Yes, you have to start learning the fluency of this tool today while it's still evolving, rather than waiting for the dust to settle.
Because if you wait for the technology to stop moving, you'll be permanently left behind.
Exactly. And this brings us to a critical tension highlighted by Sam Altman from OpenAI.
Oh, yeah, the gap he mentions.
Right. He points out this glaring discrepancy in the corporate world right now. There's a massive widening gap between what these models are actually capable of executing today and how quickly large organizations are willing to adopt them.
The capability curve is just going vertical, but the enterprise adoption curve is often flatlining.
Because executive leaders are missing a practical playbook. They see the power, but they're terrified of the risk, so they just do nothing.
Which is why Altman stresses the absolute necessity of controlled, continuous experimentation.
Right.
To make this tangible, it really reminds me of the societal transition from navigating a road trip with a giant folding paper map.
Oh, I remember those.
Right. To using a GPS application on a smartphone. When GPS first arrived, people were super skeptical.
Of course. It was new technology.
But to use the GPS effectively, you didn't need to understand the orbital mechanics of the satellites in space.
You didn't need to know how the atomic clocks synchronized with the receiver in your phone.
Exactly. You just needed to understand the interface. You needed to know how to accurately input your destination, how to interpret the directions.
And crucially, you needed the baseline human judgment to know that if the GPS tells you to take a hard right turn into a literal lake, you ignore the machine.
Yes. You trust the system's computational power, but you verify the route with your own environmental awareness.
That is the exact essence of practical AI fluency. Knowing how to interact with the system, how to establish the parameters of the request, and how to rigorously judge the output.
It's the application of judgment over the mechanics of generation?
Exactly.
I mean, I'm tracking with the theory here, but I do have to interject with some skepticism.
Okay, lay it on me.
If you've spent any time in corporate finance, or honestly any corporate function over the last 20 years, you have been sold a bill of goods regarding transformative tech over and over again.
That is very true.
We lived through the hype of the blockchain revolution, which largely evaporated for corporate finance.
Yep.
We had the big data boom that just resulted in massive unusable data lakes. We had robotic process automation that was supposed to automate everything.
But often just broke when an invoice changed format by one pixel.
Yeah, exactly. So why shouldn't a fundamentally conservative, risk-averse CFO look at this generative AI push and say, this is just another hyped, expensive tech fad?
Hmm. That skepticism isn't just understandable. It's actually a prerequisite for being a good financial steward. A CFO should never buy into hype.
Right. So what makes this different?
Well, the data synthesized in these 2026 reports presents a very compelling counterargument. We've moved past the theoretical phase.
You're talking about the IBM research cited in the text?
Yes. 69% of CFOs are now stating on the record that AI is the central pillar of their finance transformation strategy.
Wow, 69%.
And Deloitte's 2026 research indicates that 63% of finance departments are no longer in the thinking about it phase. They're actively utilizing AI solutions right now.
So the distinction is that this isn't isolated to some small innovation lab doing pilot programs that never actually scale.
Correct. It is actually hitting the floor of the finance department.
And delivering results.
The most telling data points from the IBM report focus on tangible outcomes for mature adopters. They're reporting significantly faster annual budgeting cycle,
which traditionally consumes months of agonizing manual iteration.
Exactly. They're showing material, verifiable reductions in accounts payable processing costs, and most importantly, they're successfully redeploying human capital.
Meaning they're taking highly educated analysts who were basically acting as expensive data entry clerks
and shifting them into high-value, strategic, commercial advisory roles.
The return on investment is actually showing up in the margins and in the speed of execution, which is the ultimate proof for any finance leader.
Right. So if the data confirms this is real and we understand that natural language is the interface, we need to understand what this interface is actually connecting to.
Yes. Let's pivot to the mechanics of how this operates within a company. Because if I think about interacting with AI today, my mental model is, you know, opening a browser window, logging into a website, and typing a question into a chat box.
And the source material suggests a massive architectural shift away from that.
It implies the AI is no longer a standalone oracle we go visit. It's moving into the actual plumbing of the business.
This is undoubtedly the most significant technological evolution outlined in the 2026 research. We're witnessing the transition from conversational AI to what Deloitte and PwC categorize as agentic AI.
Agentic AI. Let's define that for the listener because it sounds a bit like a buzzword. What is the actual mechanical difference between a chatbot and an AI agent?
The distinction comes down to agency, memory, and the ability to utilize external tools. A standard chatbot is reactive and isolated.
Right. You ask a question, it generates a text response, and the interaction essentially ends.
It can't take action outside of that chat window. An AI agent, however, is given a goal, a set of parameters, and access to internal corporate systems.
So instead of me just asking it a question, I'm giving it a mandate.
Precisely. The text notes that Claude now operates across the entire Microsoft Office Suite, Excel, PowerPoint, Word, Outlook via embedded add-ins.
Which means the AI has persistent context.
Yes. You aren't copying a table from Excel, pasting it into a browser, getting a summary, and then pasting it into Word. The agent sits inside the workflow.
And the text mentions Anthropic has released these ready-to-deploy finance agent templates, right?
10 of them, specifically. And these are not just suggestions for how to type a prompt. They're sophisticated, autonomous workflows designed for highly complex financial processes.
Like what? What are they actually doing?
Things like compiling investor pitch books, performing massive KYC Know Your Customer background screenings on thousands of vendors.
Oh, wow.
Conducting preliminary reviews of complex asset valuations, executing components of the month-end close checklist, and even early-stage statement auditing.
And the integration goes even deeper when you look at the Oracle research in the material.
Right. Oracle's taking a huge leap here.
Yeah, Oracle isn't just adding a chat window next to their software. They're weaving AI agents directly into the code base of their enterprise resource planning, their ERP, and their EPM systems.
And for the uninitiated, the ERP is the absolute central nervous system of a company.
It's where literally every single transaction, invoice, and journal entry lives. By putting the agent inside the ERP, the AI is sitting on top of the live transaction flow.
Capable of doing real-time anomaly detection and autonomous transaction processing. What's fascinating here is how PwC frames this for the human workforce.
Oh, so?
They argue that as these AI agents take over the literal execution gathering data, running reconciliations, drafting variance commentary, the fundamental role of the finance professional has to evolve.
Right. The human transitions from being the processor who executes the task to the governor who supervises and validates the AI agents.
You maintain total accountability for the final commercial outcome, but your hands are no longer physically on the keyboard moving data from column A to column B.
To go back to our earlier thought, it completely changes the posture of the job.
Yeah.
It feels less like being a commercial pilot who has both hands gripped tightly on the yoke, you know, physically fighting the turbulence to keep a single airplane level.
Right.
Instead, the new CFO role is akin to a highly skilled air traffic controller.
That is a great way to put it.
You're sitting in the tower, looking at a radar screen that represents dozens of automated agentic systems flying simultaneously. Your entire function is to manage the flow of traffic, spot anomalies before they become collisions, and ensure every process lands safely.
You're managing the ecosystem of execution rather than executing every movement yourself. But that introduces a brand new operational challenge.
Okay, what's that?
Well, if you're the air traffic controller, the safety of the airspace depends entirely on the clarity and precision of your communication with the automated planes.
Ah, right. If the tower mumbles vague instructions, the system breaks down.
Exactly. You cannot casually chat with these systems. You must direct them. And that leads us to the core operational skill outlined in the text, which they call engineering the brief.
Which is essentially how to write prompts like a CFO rather than just a casual user.
Yes. The text highlights Anthropic-specific prompt engineering guidance, and it immediately dispels a major myth.
That there's some secret algorithmic magic trick.
That's
right. There is no hidden keyword that unlocks perfection. It is entirely about rigorous, structured communication. A prompt given to an AI should look indistinguishably similar to a highly detailed professional brief you'd hand to a human consulting team.
So how do we actually do that? The text provides a very concrete methodology, right?
Yes, a set of prompt patterns designed specifically for finance leaders. The first fundamental pattern is defining the role and task.
Meaning you never simply upload a document and type, read this and summarize.
Never. That invites generalized, low-value output. Instead, you dictate the persona. You write something like, act as an incredibly thorough chief financial officer reviewing this draft board paper. Your task is to evaluate it strictly for commercial clarity, logical consistency, and unmitigated financial risk.
You're anchoring the neural network in a highly specific professional context before it even begins to process the data. You tell it which lens to look through.
Exactly. And then the text emphasizes setting the success criteria.
Which is brilliant, because humans are genuinely terrible at this, even when managing other humans.
Oh, we're the worst at it. We hand a junior analyst a report and say, make this better. But better is totally subjective.
Right. This better means shorter, more detailed, prettier charts. The AI needs a grading rubric.
The text suggests a prompt like, assess whether this investment paper explicitly explains the core issue, mathematically quantifies the financial impact, clearly states the executive decision required, and lists the three most likely downside risks.
You give the AI an exact checklist of what constitutes success. But wait, what about the most critical prompt pattern in this entire document?
You mean the evidence-first approach?
Yes. This is the bedrock of utilizing AI in any environment where accuracy actually matters.
You explicitly instruct the model. Before you provide any analysis or conclusions, you must first extract and quote the exact lines from the provided source document that support your position.
It literally forces the AI to show its mathematical and textual work. It tethers the AI's reasoning directly to the verifiable facts you provided. I want to dive into why that is so vital, because it addresses the single biggest fear people have about AI.
The hallucinations.
Exactly. Yeah. We've all seen the horror stories. The lawyer who submitted fictitious legal cases invented by ChatGPT, or the AI that confidently claimed a company's revenue, was double what it actually was.
It happens.
Let's look at the psychology of a human reviewer. Imagine I'm a busy controller, and I use an AI agent to draft a highly technical 40-page memo on a new revenue recognition standard.
And the AI generates it in 10 seconds.
Right. Human nature dictates that I'm going to read the first three pages closely, feel impressed by how professional it sounds, and then just start skimming. By page 15, I'm literally just nodding along.
And if the AI hallucinates a fictitious accounting precedent on page 20?
My human complacency means I will likely miss it, sign off on it, and potentially trigger an audit failure.
Yeah.
So how does this methodology actually combat that human point of failure?
It's the most important question a leader can ask. The absolute golden rule stated in the Byron Thomas text is this. A professional must never, under any circumstances, treat an AI output as the absolute truth.
It's strictly an intelligent working draft.
Exactly. It must always run the gauntlet of human review. The evidence-first prompt pattern is a structural defense mechanism against that complacency you mentioned.
Because if you force the AI to footnote every single claim with a direct quote from the source text, the human reviewer's job changes.
You are no longer reading 40 pages of prose trying to spot a lie hidden in a paragraph. You're simply auditing the AI's footnotes against the original document.
You're verifying the linkage. It drastically reduces the cognitive load required to catch an error. It makes profound sense.
It really does.
It's like managing a brilliant, hyper-productive, but incredibly literal junior analyst who just drank 5 shots of espresso.
That is a terrifying mental image, honestly.
Right. They have the raw computational power and the energy to go to 100 hours of the absolute wrong work in roughly 3 seconds.
Yeah.
If you give them a vague instruction, they will invent things just to be helpful. You have to build a rigid, heavily structured corral around them.
The prompt is the corral. And the remaining prompt patterns in the text further reinforce that corral. They suggest utilizing a challenge mode.
Oh, how did that work?
After the AI generates its analysis, you prompt it to switch personas. You ask. Now, act as a hostile external auditor or a deeply skeptical corporate lender and list the 5 hardest, most critical questions you would ask about the financial assumptions in this document.
You force the model to stress test its own logic. That is so smart.
There's also risk tiering, where you command the AI to classify all identified issues into high, medium, and low risk and mathematically justify the classification.
And finally, the controls lens, which asks the AI to review a proposed process and pinpoint exactly where a human-in-the-loop approval step must be legally or operationally mandated.
So if we understand that we have this incredibly powerful literal engine and we've learned how to build structural prompts to control it, the next logical question is, where do we actually point this engine?
Because the McKinsey guidance cited in the source material is stark. It explicitly warns leaders against trying to implement generative AI everywhere. All at once.
If you try to boil the ocean, you'll end up with 100 failed pilot programs and 0 commercial return.
Right. The McKinsey philosophy is focused on rapid, demonstrable value creation. They advise concentrating entirely on a highly selective short list of use cases to climb the learning curve safely.
And the Byron Thomas Guide distills the strategy down to 7 specific high-impact tasks for finance teams, the Magnificent 7.
Let's explore these use cases organically, tracing the natural rhythm of a corporate finance department. Let's start with the forward-looking aspect, forecasting and strategic planning. How is AI altering the way a CFO looks at the future?
The application in forecasting and scenario testing is where the technology shifts from being a basic efficiency tool to a genuine strategic partner. The text highlights a perspective from Sarah Fryer, the CFO of OpenAI.
What does she point out?
She discusses the immense power of pairing an AI's natural language reasoning capabilities directly with a complex mathematical financial model.
Historically, a CFO would look at a massive static spreadsheet showing a 5-year revenue forecast. If they wanted to know what would happen, if supply chain costs rose by 8% in year 3, an analyst would have to manually rebuild the assumptions and run a new scenario,
which might take an entire day.
But with an agentic AI integrated into the system, the CFO can interrogate that model conversationally. You can look at the output and simply type, "Claude, walk me through the specific macroeconomic assumptions driving the revenue spike in Q3 of next year. Flag any assumptions that lack historical precedent and generate 3 downside scenarios based on a potential recession."
You're turning a rigid, static mathematical document into a dynamic, interactive dialogue. It dramatically accelerates the speed of strategic decision making.
Here's where it gets really interesting for me, and it leads perfectly into the next major application.
Yeah.
The FP&A function, financial planning and analysis.
Oh, this is a massive paradigm shift.
Let's role play how this actually works today versus how it works with AI fluency. Because I think the contrast is where the aha moment lies. In a traditional corporate environment, the FP&A team spends the first 3 weeks of every single month just frantically aggregating data from different departments to build the monthly management reporting pack.
They're buried in the weeds of formatting charts and checking cell references.
Exactly. They spend 95% of their time just producing the document, which leaves them roughly 5% of their time to actually analyze what the data means before the executive meeting.
It is the most common pathology in corporate finance. You have brilliant analysts basically acting as data janitors.
Right. So imagine a scenario where the monthly variance report shows that European division sales are down 4% against the budget. The traditional exhausted FP&A analyst simply writes a bullet point that says, "Europe sales down 4% due to volume decline."
It's a statement of fact, not an insight. It doesn't help the business at all.
But if that FP&A team is utilizing Claude, the dynamic flips. The AI agent handles the rote aggregation of the data pack instantly.
And then the analyst feeds that completed management report into the AI and uses a structured prompt.
Yes, like, "Act as a strategic commercial partner." analyze this variance report. Separate the ambient statistical noise from the material commercial issues. Based on the data, generate 5 highly targeted investigative questions that I need to ask the VP of European sales to uncover the root cause of this 4% decline.
The output completely alters the analyst's posture within the company. The AI might correlate the sales decline with a previously unnoticed spike in marketing customer acquisition costs in the same region.
And prompt the analyst to ask the VP about specific competitor discounting behavior in Germany.
The finance team stops being the factory that simply manufactures the reporting packs, and they elevate into a consultative unit that shapes the strategic interrogation of the entire business.
That is a fundamental evolution of the function's value proposition. From there, let's look at the operational reality of the department, month-end close.
Oh, the bane of every accountant's existence. A mad scramble to reconcile every account, track down every missing invoice, and lock the ledger. How does AI safely intersect with something as rigid as the close process?
While we discussed earlier that Anthropic is developing agents capable of executing parts of the close autonomously, the Byron Thomas Guide suggests a much safer, practical starting point for building fluency.
Which is?
They recommend focusing on process optimization rather than execution. You take your massive, convoluted 200-step month-end close checklist and upload it to Claude. You ask it to audit the process itself.
So you prompt it to identify bottlenecks, flag handoffs between disparate teams where data is likely to be corrupted.
Highlight steps where the ownership of the task is ambiguous and suggest areas where documentary evidence should be mandated for compliance.
You are using the AI as an operational consultant to untangle the workflow rather than asking it to do the math.
Exactly. And a parallel operational use case is contract and policy review. Finance teams spend an inordinate amount of time reading supplier agreements to ensure they comply with internal corporate policies. You can deploy Claude to ingest a new 60-page vendor contract and compare it line by line against your internal procurement policy checklist.
You instruct it to identify any unusual payment terms, highlight any non-standard liability clauses, and summarize the commercial obligations.
To be clear, the human reviewer is still required to read the contract and sign off. We aren't abdicating legal review to a machine.
No, absolutely not.
But the AI acts as an incredibly fast, highly structured issue-spotting mechanism. It points a massive spotlight on the 3 clauses the human needs to worry about, rather than forcing the human to read 57 pages of boilerplate text just to find the anomalies.
That is the perfect distinction. It accelerates human judgment. It does not replace it. And we see that same principle applied to the external-facing duties of the CFO, like preparing for interactions with investors, lenders, and external auditors.
The text suggests utilizing AI to draft the initial iterations of Q&A briefing packs, audit committee memos, and covenant compliance discussion notes.
Let's pause and unpack that term for the non-accountants listening, because the stakes here are monumental. A debt covenant is not just a routine piece of financial trivia.
Oh, definitely not. When a bank loans a corporation a massive sum of money, they attach strict mathematical rules covenants to that loan. For example, the company's debt cannot exceed 3 times its earnings.
And if a company miscalculates that covenant or breaches it, they are technically in default of their contract.
The bank can legally demand immediate repayment of the entire loan, which can trigger a catastrophic liquidity crisis and literally bankrupt the company overnight. It is a company-ending mistake.
So if we are suggesting using an AI to draft covenant discussion notes, the accuracy has to be absolute. How do we reconcile the risk of AI hallucination with the existential stakes of a debt covenant?
It is the perfect illustration of why the governance framework is the most important part of this entire discussion. The text is very clear. You use the AI to aggregate the disparate data points, pull the specific definitions from the credit agreement, and draft the preliminary mathematical proof and the explanatory narrative.
But the AI is performing the heavy lifting of the drafting. The human CFO, possessing the contextual awareness of those existential stakes you just described, performs the rigorous validation.
The AI reduces the time required to build the documentation from 3 days to 3 hours, giving the CFO 2 extra days to ruthlessly audit the logic and strategize the communication with the bank.
And wrapping up the high-value use cases, there's one that focuses entirely on the human element, role design and workforce planning.
We talked about how the role of the finance professional is changing. The text suggests that a CFO can feed their current departmental job descriptions into Claude and ask it to analyze them.
You prompt the AI to identify which specific tasks within those roles are highly susceptible to automation in the next 24 months, which tasks require irreducible human judgment and commercial empathy.
And therefore, what specific skills the organization needs to start hiring for today to prepare for that future state?
It's using AI to map the future of your human capital. It's an incredibly strategic application.
But exploring these use cases brings us crashing into a massive, unavoidable reality. Generating these insights, auditing these checklists, and reviewing these contracts requires feeding the AI incredibly sensitive, highly confidential corporate data.
We're talking about unreleased financial results, strategic M&A plans, and proprietary pricing models.
Right. The risk profile of deploying AI in a finance department is entirely different than in other areas of the business.
The contrast is stark. If the marketing department uses a generative AI tool to write a blog post about a new product, and the AI hallucinates a weird phrase or gets a minor spec wrong, it's embarrassing.
You issue a correction, maybe delete a tweet, and move on.
But if the finance team uses an AI to run a complex impairment model on a billion-dollar asset acquisition, or draft a memo dictating how revenue is recognized, and the AI makes a fundamental logic error that the team fails to catch,
that is not an embarrassment. That is a material misstatement of earnings. That results in the stock price plummeting, aggressive shareholder lawsuits, and a formal investigation by the SEC.
The stakes are quite literally existential to the corporation.
Which means the internal control environment cannot be something we figure out later. It has to be the foundation.
The text heavily references PwC's responsible AI guidance, which states unequivocally that finance leaders must proactively design the controls governing how these tools are used, they must validate the outputs, and they must deeply manage the risks associated with third-party vendors.
The Byron Thomas Guide outlines a highly pragmatic, balanced governance framework for the CFO to navigate this minefield. It starts with two critical don'ts. First, do not ban AI and assume the problem is solved.
If you issue a mandate stating that no one in finance is allowed to use generative AI, you are being incredibly naive.
Your workforce knows how powerful these tools are. They will simply bypass your IT restrictions and use public AI tools on their personal smartphones to do their work, completely outside of your visibility.
Banning it is exactly like corporate IT departments trying to ban the use of personal iPhones in the workplace 15 years ago. It is an utterly impossible policy to enforce.
And all a ban actually achieves is guaranteeing that when an analyst inevitably makes a critical error using an unauthorized AI tool, they will hide it from you until it blows up into a catastrophe.
Shadow IT technology used secretly by employees is infinitely more dangerous to a company than governed, visible IT.
Precisely. The second don't is the inverse. Do not allow uncontrolled, ungoverned AI to be utilized in highly sensitive workflows. You must explicitly prohibit the use of AI in final financial reporting, tax filings, treasury operations involving cash movement, or any workflow involving material non-public information until a rigorous tested control framework is in place.
Okay, so we don't ban it, but we don't let it run wild in the Treasury Department. What are the proactive do's for a CFO?
First, do build a controlled, secure experimentation environment. You must partner with your IT department to provide your team with an enterprise-grade AI sandbox where the data inputs are secure and are legally guaranteed not to be used to train the public AI models.
Second, you must explicitly document which specific finance use cases require a mandatory human-in-the-loop approval step where the AI's activity is logged and where hard restrictions on sensitive data apply.
And crucially, the text advises educating your audit committee and your board of directors about your AI strategy before an issue forces the conversation.
You want to walk into the boardroom and say, here is how we are safely leveraging this technology to gain an advantage, rather than walking in defensively to explain an AI-generated error that the external auditors caught.
It's about controlling the narrative through proactive governance.
No.
However, whenever you introduce rigorous controls, audit committee reviews, and mandatory human validation steps, you inevitably face pushback from the business side.
Oh, always. I can hear the operations executives complaining right now. Doesn't putting up all this red tape completely kill the incredible speed and efficiency that AI is supposed to deliver? If we have to double-check everything the machine does, why use the machine at all?
It's the eternal tension between rapid innovation and corporate governance.
It's a valid concern, but the framing is flawed. The CFO's mandate is not to act as an organizational roadblock. The mandate, as defined in the text, is to ensure that AI adoption is both commercially useful and legally defensible. We need an analogy that moves away from the tired corporate cliche of controls being the brakes on a car.
I actually have one. Think of deploying AI in a corporate environment like building a nuclear reactor. The generative AI model is the nuclear reaction occurring in the core. It's generating an immense, unprecedented amount of operational energy and analytical power.
But if you just let that reaction run unchecked, it will inevitably accelerate out of control and cause a catastrophic meltdown.
Exactly. It destroys the entire facility, or in our case, the company's financial integrity. The governance frameworks, the structured prompting, the mandatory human review steps, those are the graphite control rods. You plunge them into the core, not to shut down the power, but to regulate the reaction.
The control rods are exactly what allows you to safely harness that massive energy and convert it into usable electricity without blowing up the city.
Without the governance, the power is entirely useless because it's simply too dangerous to touch.
That is a phenomenal visualization. The governance dictates the utility. So with the understanding that we need the power of the reactor, but we absolutely require the control rods, how does a finance leader actually begin construction?
How do they put this into practice starting tomorrow morning?
Well, the text provides a highly concrete, remarkably pragmatic 30-day blueprint.
It's designed to be a low-risk, high-learning ramp-up. Week one is dedicated entirely to learning the interface and understanding the mechanics of the tool with one absolute non-negotiable rule. Use public material only. No internal corporate data whatsoever.
The rationale for this is critical. Week one is not about training the AI. It is entirely about training the human's judgment.
You take a major competitor's publicly available annual report or a macroeconomic white paper, you drop it into the secure cloud environment, and you ask it to summarize the key financial risks or draft potential questions for an earnings call.
And then you meticulously manually check every single assertion the AI makes against the original public document. You are training yourself to spot the AI's hallucination patterns in an environment where a mistake has literally zero commercial consequence.
You're basically learning how to drive in an empty parking lot before you take the car into the highway. Then in week two, you graduate to internal style work, but still with a massive safety net. You utilize strictly anonymized or heavily historical internal material.
Correct. You might take a board paper from 3 years ago or a variance report where all the actual financial figures have been redacted or altered. You ask Claude to rewrite the forecast commentary for clarity, or to audit the document for missing logical evidence based on the prompt patterns we discussed earlier.
You're testing how the AI handles the specific formatting, tone, and complexity of your company's internal communications. But you're using data that wouldn't cause a crisis even if it somehow leaked.
Week three is where the strategy solidifies. You build the use case shortlist. You sit down with your finance leadership team and brainstorm potential AI applications.
But you don't just list them. You rigorously rank them against three specific criteria: the tangible commercial value to the business, the inherent operational risk of the process, and the readiness of your data to actually support the AI.
The guide notes that tasks like initial board paper reviews, summarizing complex policy documents for internal Q&A, and generating the first drafts of routine variance commentary consistently score very high on value and data readiness,
while remaining highly manageable on the risk matrix because they all mandate human review before finalization. Those become your immediate operational targets.
And finally, week four brings the entire framework together. You establish the guardrails. You draft a simple, unambiguous policy for the finance department. What specific classes of data are strictly prohibited from being entered into any AI tool?
Which specific financial workflows legally mandate human sign-off? What are the exact rules for citing sources when AI is used to draft a memo?
And crucially, once that policy is drafted, you do not keep it hidden within the finance department. You take it directly to the broader executive team and the board. The text strongly emphasizes that integrating AI into corporate finance must not be a quiet, unacknowledged side project. It requires transparent executive visibility and alignment.
This 30-day blueprint provides incredible operational clarity, but the final section of the Byron Thomas recruitment material pivots to look at the macro implications of executing this plan, because Peter Morgan and his team are looking at the executive talent market.
How does possessing this specific fluency actually alter the hiring landscape and the long-term career trajectory for financial executives?
It fundamentally rewrites the requirements for executive leadership. The text makes it clear that boards of directors and CEOs are not abandoning the traditional pillars of the CFO role. They still absolutely demand ironclad technical accounting strength, ruthless cash flow discipline, and unimpeachable corporate governance.
Those are the table stakes. None of that goes away. However, the expected operating rhythm of the CFO is shifting radically. The market is demanding future-ready executives who deeply understand how AI alters the fundamental cost structure of the business.
How it geometrically impacts employee productivity and how it accelerates the velocity of strategic decision-making. Furthermore, it mandates a completely new level of cross-functional integration.
The CFO can no longer afford to sit isolated in the finance silo, viewing technology purely as a cost center. They must partner deeply and strategically with the chief information officer to deploy the technology, the chief information security officer to secure the data perimeter, and the chief human resources officer to manage the massive shift in required employee skill sets.
That partnership is critical because the questions being asked in executive interviews have evolved. Employers are no longer asking a simplistic tactical question like, do you know how to log into Claude? That is irrelevant.
The question they're asking candidates today is, can you definitively lead a complex finance function through an era of AI-enabled technological change while relentlessly protecting our commercial trust and maintaining an impenetrable control environment?
That is a wildly different, vastly more complex question to answer.
It is the defining question of this era. And the executive candidate who can sit in that interview and answer it with concrete operational examples. The candidate who can say, I systematically tested AI agents on our month-end close checklist. Here is the exact control framework I built to validate the outputs. Here is how I navigated the cybersecurity risks in partnership with the CISO. And here is the quantifiable reduction in processing time we achieved. That candidate is going to completely dominate the executive job market.
They will run absolute circles around the traditional candidate whose only response to the AI question is, well, I believe our IT department is currently looking into a pilot program.
Absolutely. So what does this all mean if we step back and pull all these complex threads together? The thesis is clear. The CFO of the future is absolutely not a glorified prompt engineer who happens to hold a finance title.
Believing that is a fundamental misunderstanding of both the technology and the role of an executive. The CFO of the future is a commercially trusted, deeply strategic leader who leverages these incredibly powerful, intelligent tools to completely automate the rote, mechanical execution of data processing.
And they do this specifically so they can buy back the time required to elevate human judgment, deepen their strategic partnerships across the business, and drive commercial value.
It is the ultimate evolution of the profession. It's the transition from being the executive who manages the people calculating the numbers to the executive who commands the technology to calculate the numbers, thereby freeing up all their cognitive capacity to decide what those numbers actually mean for the survival and growth of the business.
This has been an immense journey. Let's briefly recap the critical waypoints of this deep dive. We started by exploring the imperative of fluency, why understanding how to communicate with AI is far more vital than understanding its underlying code, and why natural language is the new interface.
We unpacked the profound architectural shift from isolated chat windows to agentic AI that is deeply embedded in enterprise systems of record, fundamentally changing the human role from executor to governor.
We then broke down the structural discipline required to manage these tools, treating prompt engineering not as magic, but as the rigorous drafting of a professional brief, utilizing patterns like evidence first to actively combat the risk of hallucination.
We explored how to deploy this technology against high-value use cases, transforming functions like FP&A from static reporting factories into dynamic, strategic interrogators of the business.
We confronted the existential necessity of robust governance, recognizing that the stakes in finance require control frameworks that act like the graphite rods in a nuclear reactor, allowing us to harness the power safely.
And finally, we walked through a highly actionable 30-day blueprint to build this capability from scratch, securing a competitive advantage in a rapidly evolving talent market.
And it is vital to remember the broader context here. While this entire framework, drawn from the Byron Thomas Guide and the major consulting research, was designed specifically for chief financial officers, the underlying principles are universal.
Whether you are a marketing director trying to synthesize consumer data, a legal operations manager streamlining contract review, or simply a professional trying to catch up on a rapidly evolving field, the disciplines of structured communication, controlled experimentation, and the elevation of human judgment over mechanical execution apply to virtually every single knowledge worker operating today.
I agree completely. The interface has fundamentally changed for all of us, regardless of our title. But before we officially wrap up, I know you always like to leave us with something to chew on. What is the final provocative thought that emerges from all this research, something that perhaps wasn't explicitly stated in the source text, but feels like the inevitable conclusion of this trajectory?
If we project this current trajectory forward, if we assume that in the very near future, AI agents successfully, reliably, and autonomously automate the purely technical, mathematical, and reporting aspects of corporate finance, it raises a fascinating question about the ultimate nature of the role.
If the machine handles the math flawlessly, does the CFO of the future actually need to be less of a traditional accountant and much more of a behavioral psychologist?
If the ledger is automated, is the CFO's primary job now entirely focused on understanding, predicting, and influencing the human behavior, the sales incentives, the operational decisions, the market reactions that actually drive the numbers on that automated ledger?
Wow. That completely reframes the entire objective of the profession. It suggests the future of finance is less about managing the historical record and entirely about managing the human psychology that creates the record. That is a massive concept to mull over.
So the next time you find yourself sitting at that desk late at night, staring at a terrifying, paralyzing mountain of raw data with a clock ticking down to a critical meeting, remember, you no longer have to scale that mountain alone with just a spreadsheet and a calculator. You have an entirely new, incredibly powerful engine available to you. You just have to learn how to speak its language, define the parameters of success with absolute clarity, and never ever accept its first draft as the final commercial truth. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the future of executive fluency.